fighting for America.
You put a Democrat in the office of governor of Idaho, and things will change within 90 days.
Well, yeah, we'll all be worse off, Steve.
Hold on.
Fighting for Idaho.
By the way,
what part of socialism? What part of socialism is not Otter part of?
You know, this is such an optimistic. This is such an optimistic
healthcare.
Tom,
he gave us
Tom.
Fighting for you.
Gun-toting Pat, what do you have to say here? Hopefully, it's more. Hey, hold on. You have to speak into the microphone.
I said if BS was concrete, you'd be a superhighway.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. We're joined by Robert Spencer, best-selling author, Jihadi Watch, Front Page Magazine. Mr. Spencer, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great to have you with us here at 580 KIDO. So let's get to it. What the heck's going on in the Middle East from your perspective?
Well, the Middle East is obviously on fire, and the caliphate has been restored, which is momentous world historical news. The Islamic State, of course, claims to be the restoration of the ancient government that Muslims for 1,400 years believed was the only legitimate government under which Muslims should be governed. And it was abolished in 1924 by the secular Turkish government, and that has been the aspiration of jihad groups around the world to restore it. Now this group claims to have restored it, and the claim is so attractive that well over 1,000 Muslims from Western countries have actually traveled to Syria and Iraq to join up with them because they think that this is the thing that they ought to be doing. We never saw this with Al-Qaeda or other jihad groups, so many Muslims from West going to join.
Have we lost the Middle East?
Oh, well, you know, I think that it's going to get worse before it gets better. It's an unfortunate fact that people like Hosni Mubarak and Saddam Hussein and Bashar Assad, as noxious as they all were and are, they kept the peace, they kept a certain sense of stability, and they kept the lid on what the kinds of things that we're seeing now.
Well, wasn't it common sense to just keep those guys in power, especially Mubarak?
Oh, yeah. Mubarak was really, you know, he called... When the uprisings were getting very bad, he asked help from the United States several times and was, of course, rebuffed because the Obama administration actively wanted to see the Muslim Brotherhood regime come to power, the Morsi regime that only lasted a year.
Well, is this the worst foreign policy that we've ever seen in an administration?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The effect of the Obama administration's policies has been to empower America's enemies all over the world and embolden the Islamic jihadis who have vowed to destroy the United States and the West to a tremendous degree.
Now, your latest book, Arab Winter Comes to America, The Truth About the War We're In, let's start with that. Are we fighting an enemy that we just don't know anything about? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. The idea of the book is that we have denial and willful ignorance at the top, and it is endangering us all. You know, it's epitomized by the response of Obama to the Islamic State, this group that calls itself Islamic in its name, that does everything that it does based on the Quran and Islamic teaching, and the first thing he says about them is that they're not Islamic. This is just wishful thinking and willful ignorance. And the book shows that the denial is so pervasive that it kept the Fort Hood jihad massacre and the Boston Marathon jihad bombing and other jihad terror attacks from being prevented when they could have, should have, and would have been prevented were it not for all this politically correct denial.
Why do we give these folks a pass, whether it's Major Nadal Hassan, whether it's the beheading guy where we had somebody on MSNBC say it was a case of workplace violence? Why the pass for these radicals?
It seems as if the Obama administration is bound as a matter of policy to denying that there really is a jihad against the West. This would raise uncomfortable questions about their immigration policies, about the friendly attitude and posture that they have toward groups like the Council on American Islamic Relations and the Islamic Society of North America, which have ties to Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. And to deflect that kind of scrutiny, he classifies a great deal of Islamic jihad activity as having nothing to do with jihad and Islam. And it's become almost a knee-jerk reaction now. Every time there's a jihad attack, there's a slew of government officials and politicians who get on TV and say it has nothing to do with Islam. Instead instead of asking the tough questions of the mosques about what they're teaching and stepping up law enforcement scrutiny of these institutions, which they don't want to do.
Well, again, it gets kind of beyond the realm of explanation when, Mr. Spencer, we talk about someone beheading someone who on their Facebook had Osama bin Laden and such, and we say, well, he was just a misunderstood guy at work.
Yeah, it's just ludicrous. It's amazing. I was able to examine Jaquim Yisrael, the Oklahoma beheader's Facebook page, at great detail before it was taken down. And he had, as you say, pictures of Osama, pictures of the Taliban, a picture of himself holding up the one index finger, which is the sign of allegiance to the Islamic State, a picture of a graphic photo of a beheading that had underneath it a Quran verse calling for beheading. And so this guy was obviously very deeply enamored of Islamic jihad activity, and then he imitated it in his own life. And so it's just absolutely beyond absurd for the Obama administration to claim that there is no Islamic connection to this.
Well, and again, we go back to, we're fighting an enemy that has no fear of the United States of America. And Al-Qaeda said that, and the Taliban said that, but they knew we could bring harm to them. Mr. Spencer, have we ever seen anything like these beheadings? And what's the motivation behind this social media promotion of these beheadings? What is their point of view in doing these horrible crimes?
Well, I know it's repulsive to Americans. It's horrifying to Americans, but that's actually part of the point, that they are trying to, in the words of the Quran, strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah, which is something that's commanded of Muslims to do. And so that's one thing. The very fact that we find this so repugnant is one of the reasons why they do it. And second, because it's a recruiting tool, because then young jihadis and would-be jihadis who see that they really are carrying out the Quran's commands to strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah say, this is the group for me. I'm going to join up with them.
Now, when you've given lectures to the FBI and to the Army and the General Staff, what has been their reaction to what you're saying about these folks and what makes them so dangerous?
When I have spoken to FBI groups, military groups, and so on, they were very receptive to this, and they were very relieved that they were finally getting the full truth that made sense of what they see in the world and what's going on. The Obama administration put a stop to all that in 2011 when they forbade any mention of Islam and jihad in connection with terrorism in counter-terror training. And since then, willful ignorance has ruled the day, and FBI agents are abjectly ill-equipped to understand and evaluate the intelligence that they receive.
Most of us, whether we've had flashbacks of Kingdom of Heaven or studied the Crusades in high school or maybe college, you know, they're a distant memory, but does this go back to the Crusades with these people?
Yeah, it goes back actually further. There were 450 years of jihad activity that conquered and Islamized what up until then had been half of the Christian world. And that was well before there was any crusade. And they believed that those people way back in the medieval times believed that they were acting upon imperatives of Muhammad and the Quran. And so does the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda today. It's all the same impulse that comes from the same religious teaching.
Well, if you were putting money on this, one side seems to be passionate. That would be them. We don't seem to have that same enthusiasm.
Yes, that's the problem. Because, you know, we see it again and again in history. If you look at an example that has nothing to do with Islam whatsoever, the Bolsheviks were never a majority in Russia, never close to a majority, but they had the passion, they had the will, they had the focus, they had the drive, and their opposition was divided, confused, and did not have the will to fight. And so the Soviet Union was created and was able to stay there for 70 years. I think we're seeing something very much like that happening now.
Okay, what about our friends, the Iranians, former home of former crazy Mahmoud, their former leader?
Well, the Iranians, you know, they're Shiites, and that means that they hate the Sunni caliphate, and they don't want to see the Islamic State there. And so I think that things could change significantly if the Islamic State takes Baghdad or even seriously threatens to do so. I know they're very close, but they haven't mounted any all-out attack on it at this point, and I think that's because they know that if they do, they could draw the Iranians in, and that might be the end of their story.
Aren't they going to draw us in if they capture Baghdad?
They could well, and then it would be under the very strange circumstance of fighting alongside the Iranians who are chanting death to America in Tehran in their military parades, but also fighting against the people that we gave weapons to and empowered in Syria to fight against Assad, who's Iran's ally. The situation is extraordinarily confused, and Obama's response to it has been so incoherent that we are on both sides of this issue at the same time.
Are you surprised by this, considering you know so much about this region and everything else, that we have an administration that was going to do the outreach to the Muslim world has been so wrong?
Oh, no, I'm not in the least surprised that he's been completely wrong. I knew he would be completely wrong from the start. His premises are wrong. Even when he denies that these groups have anything to do with Islam, it shows that this man is more interested in fantasy than in reality, and he's basing policy on fantasy, and that never has good results.
So we've covered Iran. What did we do wrong in Iraq? I mean, billions of dollars, blood and treasure, and now the whole thing is blowing up.
Well, there were so many things that we did wrong in Iraq. In the first place, George W. Bush thought that the Iraqis would welcome us as liberators. They did not. There was never any understanding of why that was so. That was so because the Iraqis believed in general, with whichever camp they were in, that Islamic law ought to rule the country, not a law based on democracy. They did not have any democratic tradition, did not value democracy, didn't believe in it. And as it happened, when we did the put in one man, one vote system, we got the exactly predictable results, that the group with the largest population would win the power, and that's what happened. The Shiites had 55% of Iraq, and so they won 55% of the vote. Everybody voted strictly along sectarian and tribal lines. And so the weak Shiite regime came in, and the Sunnis never supported it. The Shiite regime never gave any significant power to the Sunnis. And then the Sunni jihadis banded together to create the Islamic State, and we have the situation we're in now. The whole thing was ill-conceived from the start. If Saddam Hussein were still there, or Saddam Hussein's dictatorial successor, they would be terrible dictators, but this kind of thing would not be going on.
Right. It goes back to Saddam was a bad man, but he was our bad man.
Yeah. And, you know, he was a bulwark against Iran. The Iran-Iraq war went on for 10 years. In the 1980s, and all that time, neither Iran nor Iraq were plotting any mischief against the United States. This is an uncomfortable fact, but it's a fact. Iran has designs over the whole region. The Sunnis will never stand for any Iranian hegemony over significant Sunni territory, and that means there's going to be civil war and ever-widening conflict. And all of this could have been avoided had we left the status quo ante.
Mr. Spencer, please stand.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning as we continue on. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Our guest once again is Robert Spencer joining us. You can catch him at a lot of places. Mr. Spencer, people want to get a hold of you. What can they do?
Jihadwatch.org is online, jihadwatch.org. And that's my website. It is a news and commentary site tracking jihad activity in the U.S. and around the world, updated many times daily.
How worried are you about your safety in tracking these radicals?
Oh, I get plenty of death threats, but it's not as if I'm going to live forever if I don't do this, and it has to be done. So there you are.
Wow. Really? Specific death threats?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plenty of them. The thing is, though, the guys that give you death threats, they're not going to kill you. They just are getting their satisfaction from issuing the threat. The only problem is that they're doing that suggests that there may be other people who are not going to tell you, but they might be tracking you. And, you know, you never know, but I haven't had any incidents. I do speak when I speak out in public. I have a bodyguard and, you know, take precautions. But it is what it is. There's nothing that ultimately can be done. I think that the Declaration of Independence, you know, those guys ended up by pledging their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor to that great cause. And that if we don't have people who are willing to do that now to defend it, to the cause of defending freedom, then we're done for.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other countries in the Middle East. What about Afghanistan? What's going on there?
Well, Afghanistan just elected a new president, and they are, according to Barack Obama, a stable functioning democracy. But of course, the Taliban is still there, and the Taliban is probably going to topple that government as soon as the last troops are gone, the last American troops. Obama has pledged to get them out by the end of next year, and this is like giving an announcement to the enemy that all they have to do is wait out the period between now and then they can step up operations. It's the most tactically stupid thing you could possibly do, but for this administration, it actually passes as pretty sharp compared to everything else they've done.
Well, we do have the alleged status of forces agreement that may be signed there. Would that change, and the idea that we were building some type of special operations center to service that region?
Well, the problem is that there's not going to be any significant force involved in that, at least as it's projected now. And the cooperation that it so heavily depends upon from the Afghans themselves is going to be of little effectiveness. I mean, after all, the Afghan military has had an appalling record of having people who are being trained by American service personnel turn on those personnel and kill them. And this is obviously not every Afghan soldier who has been trained by an American, but there is a there is a huge record of what are called green-on-blue attacks that should have ended this whole misadventure long ago. But instead, it just continues. The only problem is that those green-on-blue attacks are going to continue as well. They are a symbol, an emblem of the fact that this is a group that you cannot be prevented from being infiltrated, cannot be prevented from being thoroughly penetrated by Taliban forces that will target Americans. And this makes any kind of large-scale cooperation extremely problematic because it just can't mount effective large-scale efforts with a group that cannot be wholly trusted.
Back to ISIS, do you think it's only a matter of time when our troops are going in there?
I tell you what, I don't know about that because Barack Obama is very much set against it. But I do know that if we don't do it, then they're just going to keep coming. That the Islamic State is an aggressive force that is dedicated to advancing, and they're going to keep expanding until they're stopped. It may be that the U.S. military is the only force capable of stopping them at this point.
And yet no call from Saudi Arabia or Jordan or anybody else.
Yeah, well, they're in a very difficult position because the Islamic State has wide approval in their countries, despite all the obfuscation in the mainstream media. The fact is this group is following the Quran, and they are very popular among many Muslims as a result. Not all, yes, but in Saudi Arabia, there was a poll that showed they have 92% support. And so if the Saudis, who don't like them and don't want them there, move against them too decisively, they could end up with an insurrection at home. And so they have to tread very carefully.
What's the overall lesson here, Mr. Spencer? I mean, I go back to, you know, as you said, the pre-Crusades here. We've messed with someone that doesn't have a problem that will continue to fight us no matter what. They won't stop. Even if you did what we did to the Japanese, I don't think that these folks would stop.
No, you're quite right. They would never stop. These people are dyed-in-the-wool true believers, and they are acting upon what they believe in. They're never going to stop until they are stopped. And so we have to. The problem is we're in total denial about the nature and magnitude of this threat. There needs to be global strategizing about how to contain it and ultimately defeat it that meets the ideological challenge as well as the military one. But nobody's remotely close to doing that.
Finally, what about Putin? What does he think of all this?
Well, Putin knows, I think, far more than Barack Obama does what kind of a threat this group constitutes. And so it may be that Putin will ultimately act against them. He's facing Chechen jihadis that he has dealt with very forcefully. And so I would expect more decision, more decisiveness, more action from him than from Obama.
Well, it was amazing when we were, going to go in there and get Assad. It was Putin that said, you might not want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Because Putin knew that you take out Assad, then you're empowering groups like the Islamic State. And so he was always much more clear-eyed about this.
Mr. Spencer, we'd love to have you back. Thank you.
Call me anytime. Thank you.
All right, there we have it. Robert Spencer joining us. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Asking a federal appeals court for a review of the ruling to allow gay marriage in Idaho. Governor says the panel made some critical errors when it ruled that Idaho's definition of marriage was unconstitutional.
giving Idaho a reason to get out of bed. Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Grandma, you've outdone yourself on that one. Never would I equate 38 Special, Maggie O'Mara, Governor Otter, and gay marriage. Good morning. Kevin Miller with you here, starting your day on the just what the heck is going on. I do invite you to go to our website, 580kido.com. We have a poll up there. If the election were held today, who has your vote for governor? Currently, right now, let's take a look at the real-time results. Let me see. We've got A.J. Belukoff. We've got John Bujak. We've got Butch Otter. We've got all these folks here right now. Mr. Bujak appears to be winning, followed by Governor Otter and A.J. Belukoff. We'll have much more on that. Plus, the governor now is going back to the Ninth Circuit. Is this good old-fashioned moral integrity or election year politicking? We'll talk about that in a minute. Joined now by someone who I know, I am not the only one that watches all of the Sunday shows, our friend Rachel Sutherland of Fox News Radio. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
You know, I feel so comfortable with you, I almost called you madam.
Well, whichever works for you.
Too many appearances of Hell's Kitchen for me, but let's talk a little bit about something that we see for a lot of folks. They don't get a lot of time off. Sick time has been eliminated in the private sector, but what about the public sector? How much money, Rachel, are we spending when it comes to government, giving people paid leave?
Well, Kevin, the Government Accountability Office came out with a report yesterday showing that when it comes to paid leave, say a federal worker is put on administrative leave for investigation of misconduct or another reason, we're spending about $775 million. We did over a three-year period to maintain these workers on paid leave at home, their full benefits and everything, while charges against them are being investigated. That's just kind of how the government's run. I mean, as you know, Kevin, if we do something on the job, most of us are at will, we could just be told to clean out our desk and go. That's not the case with the federal government. They have protections that makes it very difficult for them to get fired.
I serve at the will of our boss, Kevin Godwin. I always say that when people say, well, what about you? You've got this. I go, I serve at the will of Kevin Godwin.
We all have bosses, and thank goodness for them. I mean, they sign our paychecks. But in a lot of cases with the federal government.
Please, sir, could I have a little crumb? Sorry, I was.
Yeah, with the federal government, though, it's just very difficult to get fired, as you know. And,
right.
And this is a process that they go through. But in some cases, we're finding that they're off the job for not just a month or something. In some cases, it's been months or even up to a year.
It's crazy when the nonpartisan GAO comes out with this, Rachel, because it's such a different world than the taxpayers who support this system.
That's right. It's hard for us to get our minds around. Although, you know, I live and work in Washington, D.C., and so there's a lot of federal government workers here, people that I've known for years, people that I grew up with that are federal workers. So I get the mentality. I even get why they do what they do. Some of them have even taken pay cuts. They could have made more money in the private sector to do what they do. They decided to go with the government because of the protections and because it's so hard to get fired and the pensions and all the benefits. But for those working stiffs like us who get up every morning and we know that at any moment, especially in broadcasting, that life could change quickly, it's just hard to really get our minds around it.
Your colleague, John Gibson, who still does radio and used to be on the Big Fox, he said it. You haven't been anywhere in this business unless you've been fired 75 times. And I guess I've been somewhere in this business, Rachel.
Well, I'm kind of an anomaly in that, I've only been through one round of layoffs and that was something shutting down. But I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Well, you bring up a good point, though. And you can always tell people, and there's an anxiety. You know, it used to be just broadcasters would fear for their jobs. Now, all of a sudden, it seems the world has become like broadcasting. Everybody fears for their jobs. And then you have other folks that are insulated, whether it's in the medical profession or the government profession, that, hey, they don't seem to live with that same fear. Now, their jobs still could be in jeopardy, but they don't have that same, you know, hey, commit to us, give us everything you have. Oh, I'm sorry, we're pulling the plug. And let me veer off topic. You'll love this. The whole thing that's going on at CNN with, 300 people losing their jobs. Jane Velez Metchel's show that's been on for 8 years getting the boot. It's a different world, the private versus the public sector.
Yeah, it is a different world, and especially you make a good point when you talk about how we've lived with this angst as broadcasters for all of our career. But I think when everything collapsed in 2008, Lehman Brothers, the whole nightmare that went on, I don't think anyone's ever gone to bed at night without sort of wondering since then, unless you are one of these government workers. And even them, I mean, there's been cuts to the government, people lost jobs too. So it's been an anxious time, and everybody's hoping it gets better. But anyway, you know, back to this $775 million, there is a move afoot in Congress to review what's going on and maybe change the system. But I don't know. The government seems rather recalcitrant. I don't know about you.
I've got a shocker for you, and once again, you're going to go, gosh, he's going off topic again. But I feel a closeness with you, Rachel. So I will try and to do this here. Are you a big fan of Nancy Grace at all?
You know, I haven't watched her in a while. She's definitely got her own style, doesn't she?
She's very unique and very polarizing. Your friend Evan Brown and I used to do a lot of work for her. And, you know, she's in Phoenix right now. But I thought her show was relatively safe. Now, I'm sure you peruse the Daily Caller.
Sometimes, sure.
Daily Caller has the exclusive that might be the end of the line for Nancy Grace.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, anybody that's in this business, I feel for. I don't like to beat up on people in the business because we know it's a hard job. I'm not one to do that. And if someone loses their job, I always feel disappointed about that. Nancy Grace has certainly had her stick. She kind of reminds me of sort of the America's Most Wanted type of situation, only a female. She's always on the case when it came to missing persons and crime and that kind of thing. But
no, I'm with you.
The bottom line is not the viewership. It won't work.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, having worked with her, a big heart, big heart.
Yeah, I haven't met her, and I wish her well. I mean, I'm sure she'll land on her feet somewhere. I mean, someone who's had such a successful run for such a long time will find something.
Maybe you could put in a good word for her.
Well, I don't know that my word will mean much, but okay.
Well, it does with us, Rachel.
Well, thank you.
You have a good day. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks.
Our great friend, Rachel Sutherland, we got her off topic there. Uh-oh. But, you know, those of you that watch the TVs, and I know that there are a lot of people, it's funny, I was out and about, well, it was during our domestic violence forum in Ada County, and we're still trying to put one together in Canyon County, although it's getting kind of tough to do it at the end of this month here. Just trying to find a venue. We've reached out to one university there. You know the one. They haven't called us back. And then the other one, well, we're still looking at that, and anyway, hopefully we'll be able to do that now. We have to raise awareness about domestic violence. And I was talking to somebody, and I said, you know, used to do a lot of work for Nancy Grace, and there are a lot of young women and some women that are not so young that love Nancy Grace. Now, the men do not dig her at all, but a lot of people love her. So, you know, again, I was perusing the internet, and, you know, there's a report that the show might be canceled, which would be shocking to me because it is such a show that, yes, they do exploit people all the time, but they do some good work. And I know those people on that show. And having had the experience of doing every show on cable television at least at one time, including Bill O'Reilly, I will tell you that those folks that work on Nancy Grace are the nicest people that I know. So even if you're a big star, you could lose your job. And that's why we always have the humility. That's why we always look for, you know, the opinions with the news and coming up with solutions for you. It is 6:45. We're less than 2 minutes away from traffic here at 580 KIDO. The big story that, you know, it's interesting. There are two big stories that I think that we'll talk about locally. One is the controversy over the tiered certification. You remember we brought this up before anybody else concerning recertifying teachers because we want to get rid of the bad teachers. Okay, knock yourself out on that one. And the issue involving the governor. Now, you remember when we had our Chaka Khan moment when we went down to the Ada County Courthouse and, hey, look, there's Betty and Sue getting married. Oh, how lovely. Which one's Betty and which one's Sue? I don't know. Nobody wears dresses anymore except dudes. Regardless of that, it was on every television station. It was on almost every radio station, and everybody's saying, I don't have a problem with it. There was one person that stood up and said, I disagree with it. I may lose my job over it, but I am going to stick with what the people of Idaho said in 2006, which is no to redefining marriage. And yesterday, not through my own brain power, but somebody mentioned this to me, that they believe that if the governor would have said no to the federal government, using the examples of Colorado and Washington, that he might have a case. Look, smoking pot's illegal. However, that's not stopping people in Colorado and Washington from doing it. So why don't the feds go in there? So why can't a governor say, well, the federal law says this, but I'm going to do my own thing because the people voted on it? That's one issue. Another issue, and you can tell that this election is very close, I believe. And what was it last week we had on Phil Hardy talking about the plus or minus is within 4 points, within the margin of error, the closest it's ever been. So the governor has requested that the Ninth Circuit, the 11-judge panel, review the 3-judge ruling against Idaho's constitutional definition of marriage. Remember last week the governor said that he was not going to do that. Now he's doing this. This is a shrewd political move. First of all, to rally conservative, God-fearing Christians that believe that the governor should do more. And the governor needs those people against Mr. Belukov. And as I said yesterday during the Manly Man segment, which you can always podcast, the 5:30 hour or half hour with Dave Burnett, the governor is starting to look gubernatorial. He's out there with his leather jacket, and I'm not bashing him. I'm just saying I think it's a shrewd move, both policy-wise and politically, to appear to have this big conference on Ebola. Now, as always, I think it's a couple weeks too late. Others will say they had to get people together. Look, you're the governor of the state of Idaho. You get these people together, lickety-split. So we're starting to see a further ramping up of this election. And if you want to cast your vote, you can go to 580kido.com, and I'll continue with the results coming up after traffic. It is 6:48. Why not get you to work?
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, so is it practical or political? The governor going back to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the 11-judge panel to review the 3-judge ruling that overturned Idaho's defense of marriage, not a gay marriage ban. Oh, by the way, this is from Mrs. Miller. You sound a little stuffy and a little down today. Pick it up, Slappy. Okay, well, thank you, Mrs. Miller. We will try to do that. And, you know, we move on. And a lot of people are working today, and they work with the colds, so no big deal. We apologize for the lack of enthusiasm or perhaps the nasally sound. Hello there. Anyway, I always liked it when I got a cold because my voice got deeper and it didn't sound like I was 14 anymore. 6:55, Kevin Miller with you here at 580KIDO. So we will talk about this with Mike Tracy coming up. Now, we were the first to report here in the state of Idaho about the Knapps. They are the couple that are being sued by Coeur d'Alene. Remember, they're being sued because they said no to, I believe, 2 lesbians or 2 gay men, whichever it was, where you have Coeur d'Alene going after these folks because they've decided, hey, they're not into it. And as I've said before, if you're gay, if you're lesbian, if you're transgender or whatever, why in the world would you want to go somewhere that doesn't want you? In fact, I will tell you a little secret between you and me. Or is it you and I? I don't know. I'm not an English major. Whatever. A friend of mine, a very learned scholar, said to me once, there is no rationalization. Life is like dating. If you want to go out with someone, you go out with them. You don't play games. If you want to do business with someone, you do business with someone. You don't wait 3 days later to return the call. You make it happen. You want to do things. And it's like us with one of our projects. We reach out to someone. We haven't heard back. So we get the message. We just move on to someone who appreciates what you and this program have to offer. Other folks, again, don't seem to get it. But it comes back to this issue. If you are a person that does weddings, or you service weddings, or you're a wedding planner, why in the world would you want to hire someone if you were lesbian, if you were gay, if you were whatever, that doesn't believe in your union? Why would you want that stress unless the principle is more important, is much more important than your union? Making a stand and making sure that someone else's freedom to choose is eliminated. Remember, we're talking about a state where four lesbians overturned thousands of votes. Welcome to Idaho, folks. Here's a potato. 6:57, time for traffic at 5. And back right at you, coming up, political insider Mike Tracy will join us. We'll break down all things political. Looking forward to Mike's knowledge here. Hey, here's something, and I saw this on the Facebook, and I'm sure it's coming to a TV near you, and it's the new A.J. Belukoff ad. And maybe, folks, we should all go back to school and get our degrees in political science and do something meaningful with our lives. Well, it is meaningful what we do, but you know what I'm saying, because we're going to go hardball with you, inside, if you will. The education issue, as I have said repeatedly, must be trending incredibly well. It must be so uber dynamic. Why? Because Mr. Belukoff has now will release another ad where an Idaho teacher says that many of his colleagues, because they are so underpaid, are on public assistance. The teachers are going broke in the state of Idaho, and Mr. Belukoff says that he can fix it. It has to be, again, a crucial issue. It is true. I'm sure it is. But again, what will rule the day? Education or business? You'll decide, Kevin Miller.
Serving Emmett.